This is Coda Radio, episode 565 for April 9th, 2024. Hey friend, welcome into Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show, taking a pragmatic look at the art and the business of software development and the world of technology. My name is Chris, and joining us, keeping his eyes on Google, it's our host, Mr. Dominic. Hello, Mike.
Guten afternoon, mein Chris.
Hello, good sir. How are you? Hello.
I'm actually pretty good. I've been coding my little tail took us off today, as they say.
You mean you weren't glued to Google's cloud stream?
With all their what happened.
Oh, yeah.
Another paying attention to tech news win, obviously.
No, there wasn't much. They announced some nice stuff for Google Workspace users, including this Google Vids, which they call an AI-powered presentation tool where you kind of give it a description of what you want with your presentation. And then it tries to put together like stock imagery and things like that to go along with it to kind of like jazz up your presentation, I guess. I think you and I are both paying for the premium Google Gemini experience with the Google Workspace accounts. And there really hasn't been much to like pay for, right? Like,
it's kind of weird.
Yeah. So they're trying to get that problem solved, I think. So they've got an update to the Help Me Write in Gmail. They've got updates to Google Docs. They've got they're just cramming Gemini into a few more places like Google Chat to summarize conversations. And they may make it capable of answering conversations and questions at some point in the future, which, I don't know, I guess that's kind of neat. And then they're introducing AI meetings and AI security add-ons for the enterprise. You can do all kinds of neat stuff because it can scan your Google Drive, supposedly. I actually always thought this is where this would be the most impactful, to tell you the truth, would be integration with products like this.
Well, like, so how many times are you like trying to negotiate a meeting and, you know, they can't really see your calendar, they're trying to book a time. SavvyCal, but not everybody cooperates with that. And just for like Gmail to reply to a meeting invite where it knows you have a conflict and just say, hey, I have something else at that time. Here are times that I'm available, you know, within certain parameters, right?
There's also a Google announcement that seems to be getting a bit more attention. It's Axion, their first custom ARM-based data center processor. They say it's based on the ARM Neoverse 2 designs. It offers 30% better performance than other ARM-based instances from companies like AWS. Of course, this is going to be in Google Cloud. 50% better performance than Microsoft's ARM offerings, and 60% better energy efficient compared to x86 instances, like comparable x86 instances. But then there was this little bit that they added. Technical documentation, including benchmark and architecture details, will be available later this year. To me, sounds like it's not actually ready yet. They just went ahead and announced it because they had a Google Cloud event, but their processor is not actually available yet because they don't even have the documentation or benchmarks ready or architecture details.
What kind of monster would try to sell vaporware? Kind of fiend.
No, not Google. Not Google.
So I have a confession, Father.
All right.
For I have sinned.
All right.
I have discovered a new Google project that I like.
Oh, yeah?
But I will not name it.
Oh.
Because once we utter the name, it's dead. It's like that anime thing, Death Note, that the kids like. When you write it, apparently, like, all this kid has to do is write a dude's name in a journal and the guy dies of a heart attack.
Oh,
that's how it is with Google projects. Wow, Google Wave is really cool.
Boom.
Then there's some PM at Google who starts throwing up on his desk and is like, cancel it, get rid of it. I can't. Google Podcast is great. No, actually, they still haven't killed it, even though they said they did. So I'm not sure how that works. Google Reader, everybody's using it. It must be destroyed.
It's very true. All right, so don't name it. Don't name it. I guess the reverse would also be true. You could name things like, what if we just kept talking about AdWords? Would that eventually get killed? See, I don't think it applies there.
Okay, let's try it. Ready?
Okay.
AdWords.
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 AdWords. AdWords.
AdWords. It's like Beetlejuice. We say it three times and it kind of just...
AdWords, yeah. AdWords, AdWords. Maybe it does. I don't know. I want to mention that Linux Fest Northwest is rapidly approaching. You can find it at linuxfestnorthwest.org. It'll be in Bellingham, Washington. And we have a special barbecue Saturday night, April 27th. System 76 and JB are throwing it in the parking lot. Don't tell anybody. I mean, tell your friends, but don't tell anybody at the fest yet. But go to meetup.com. What is it? meetup.com/system76-community. I'll put a link in the show notes. Tell us if you're going to attend, because if you don't, I might not buy you a burger or a hot dog. You know, like, here's what's happened right now. Is maybe we should have put this on the JB page. I don't know. But we've got two people signed up for the meetup. Emma from System 76 and me. Now, I know I'm going to end up cooking for hundreds of these bastards. But none of them are signing up for the meetup. So how
am I? You don't know how much to buy, how much to prep. Yeah.
No, no. So I'm trying to get the word out there. Linux Fest Northwest, barbecue. After the end of sessions on Saturday, we'll be out in the parking lot somewhere. Just go probably find my RV. And I think that'll be there. And then you'll find. Or maybe just follow your nose. We'll have a link in the show notes if you want to signal your intentions to attend. Coder.show/membership. Well, I don't really have much for you because all of the Jar Jar promo codes got used up. And thankfully, now that we've gotten that out of the system, I'm not going to be giving away the milk anymore. What's that? What's this? Why are you handing me this? What? I regret to inform you that Darth Jar Jar has hacked the... What? We have a new promo code? Promo code Darth Jar Jar? You've got to be... Come on! Come on! You guys got to run this stuff past me. How is this... Okay. And there's 10 redemptions? 10 redemptions again? You're doing this again? Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. Promo code Darth Jar Jar. Take $1 off your membership for a year. And you contribute to the show directly. New members, existing members, when you reactivate, there's 10 redemptions possible. Coder.show/membership. I want to say thank you because we have our top of April members that came in since the last episode. Steven, Timothy, of course we call him Tim around here. Sean, Coiler, and Soham, I believe. Sorry if I'm getting any of those names wrong, but we do very much appreciate you signing up as a member. It's not only a great way to support the show directly, but it gives us that estimated budget where we know we're going to be able to put food on the table, pay the wonderful Drew, et cetera, et cetera. So 10 possible redemptions. Use the promo code Darth Jar Jar. I can't believe it. We'll have a link in the show notes, too. Thanks to everybody who supports the show. While we are advertiser-free at the moment, it's not really the best way to put it, I suppose. It's more like we are without advertiser. We are advertiser-less. We are between advertisers. You know, it's awkward. The other podcasts ask about it. We don't really know how to describe ourselves. But with our members, we can keep on going. And we pivot the conversation quickly to how great the members are. Coder.show/membership. Well, let's keep the ARM train going, Mr. Dominic, because Microsoft is confident that they have a ARM CPU that can beat M3s from Apple. Current M3s, they're going to be revealed in Microsoft's AI PCs next month at an event here in Seattle that I haven't been invited to. And a person familiar with Microsoft's plans tells The Verge that Microsoft is, quote, confident that this new round of ARM-powered Windows laptops will beat Apple's M3-powered MacBook Airs in both CPU for performance and AI-accelerated tasks. Microsoft believes the upcoming Snapdragon X Elite processors will finally offer the performance it has been looking for to fully push ARM Windows. They're so confident in these new Qualcomm chips that they're planning a number of demos that will just show you how fast these processors are and how much better they are than an M3 MacBook Air for CPU tasks, AI acceleration, and even app emulation. Yes, even app emulation. They claim they will have faster x86 emulation than Rosetta 2, which is so damn fast you really can't even tell it's working. They say it's been a big problem, but they've got it licked.
Okay, sure. So does Visual Studio proper work with full functionality in it?
Oh, savage. That really, you know, that's funny, though, because that's really what it would take for these things to be successful. Yep. They're so hyper-focused on performance. I'm trying to figure out, the reason why I wanted to talk to you about this is, who's the use case here? Like, are these developers that are targeting ARM systems in the cloud that want to have an ARM laptop to develop on? Who's this for?
I'll give you the kind of jerky answer first, right? The use case is the tech press, right?
Seems like it.
Because the real people buying Windows laptops don't care.
No. No.
They just don't.
Your average users, which, you know, the everyday users that are buying laptops and computers from retail stores, absolutely 100% don't care. And I would argue most Windows power users are actually pretty happy with how far AMD and Intel have pushed x86 in the last couple of years.
Right. They're like buying towers. In fact, I was just talking to our friend Matt from Alderaan. He's got a Thaleo with my brain just completely failed. The crazy AMD chipset.
Oh, like a Ryzen or an Epic or a...
No, the Threadrippers.
Oh, Threadripper. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, he's Threadripping his all live long day. And I don't know, right? Like, if you're a Windows power user, I kind of think you know what chipsets you want. It's funny to me that they're going for the performance stuff, because what I see the advantage of ARM on Windows is, okay, we have a Windows-based job, right? We have to travel to the job, and it would be great to have, like, MacBook-level battery life. But they're not really selling it as that. They're selling it as raw power, and I'm like, I don't care. I have a fancy-ass Dell for that, right? Like,
in fact, if anything, the lesson from the M transition from Apple was focus on power efficiency, not performance.
Apple's also selling at Walmart, what is it, the M1 for like $600 or $700?
Yeah. All right, but here's the specs of the Snapdragon X Elite. It does sound pretty badass. Mm. 12 cores up to 3.8 gigahertz. And dual core boost up to 4.3 gigahertz. All right. It can do tera floating point operations up to 4.6 teraflops per second. Lots of RAM, eight channels of RAM, a bandwidth of 136 gigabytes a second, up to 64 gig max capacity. It's got a direct NVMe over PCIe 4 interface into it. I mean, it sounds desktop class, but I don't really understand the appeal. Unless, like Mike said, you're in it for battery life, then I totally understand the appeal. Or if you're developing ARM applications, but if you're developing ARM applications, they're likely shipping on Linux. I mean, you could use WSL, but it seems really odd, because it's Microsoft's strength comes from their compatibility. I think the x86 world has responded really well to ARM in desktops and laptops. I don't know, man. But they're very confident. I kind of wish I could go to this event in Seattle and see it.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, right? But I just like think about the, you know, because as I've mentioned many times, Microsoft, and you're of course in the same boat. Microsoft has a campus down here in Tampa as well, and obviously Seattle, right? That's like the Death Star. From the developer perspective, the Microsoft developers, not necessarily Microsoft employees, all right, but like, you know, on the Microsoft stacks, they kind of live in Visual Studio. Now, some of them are sneaking away to Python, to VS Code, I've noticed. Looking at you, Joey, looking right at you. But for the vast majority, especially those doing .NET, they're still in VS proper. So, and to their credit, this is not like me being, you know, difficult at all. They have some pretty sophisticated, very customized workflows in there that rely on things like Hypervisor, and some of the other, like, other, you know, like the tying into iOS. I forgot what Microsoft calls that. Is it not Handshake? They have a name for it. Doesn't matter. But is that all going to work in this Rosetta 2 analog? Because even Windows emulation on Mac with Rosetta 2 on my fancy ass 96 gigabytes MacBook Pro here is lacking.
Yeah.
Particularly in the use cases I've described here, right? The Visual Studio proper. So I'm skeptical, right? Because first of all, these devices are not going to be cheap. If we look at our average Joe Windows laptop at Best Buy buyer, he's not looking to spend $2,000 to $3,000, which, well, he shouldn't, right? He's probably, most people probably just work. I could tell you, most of my clients, we write web apps and they work in Chrome.
Right.
Right. Like, they just live in Chrome.
Has just recently got their ARM64 version for Windows kind of put together. So, finally, that's available for Windows.
Ah, good. So the malicious JavaScript Bitcoin miners can be even more efficient.
And all your Chrome extensions, dude. You can bring all your Chrome extensions. The thing that I actually look forward to here is what this could mean for Linux. Now, it really depends on how locked down these bootloaders are. If it's possible to load alternative operating systems, I very much hope it will be, because there isn't a great set of ARM options for Linux laptops. There are actually one of the better ones, even with it, some not everything working, is quite honestly the MacBooks with Asahi on there. That's my damn near daily driver at this point, and it's pretty functional, I have to say. So, but you know, and then when we finally got Linux working on the MacBooks, people started discovering all of these issues when they started using ARM Linux on something much more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, you know, maybe it'd actually be a great thing for Linux. I don't know how locked down they'll have these AI PCs. These accelerators are going to be useless, though, to Linux.
Yeah.
They're all going to be proprietary.
And also, it's not a vacuum, right? So, I mean, if I can fry some penguin bacon here.
Oh, man, you brought penguin bacon.
Oh, yes. I'm pretty sure Framework is going to come out with an ARM.
Oh, yeah,
a viable ARM substitute. And if not Framework, I mean, I don't know this at all, but if Carl and the gang at System76 aren't working on this, they definitely should be.
You know, I've talked to them. And I don't know about now. This has been a couple of years, so they may have changed their opinion on this. But they were kind of hoping on RISC-V working out in a laptop, maybe skipping right over ARM. But yeah,
that didn't happen.
Well, then, and the network effect of ARM continues to grow as well.
Well, RISC-V actually, ironically, was much more promising on the server side than ARM. But just the like you said, the network effect, the pure locomotive, just, you know, momentum that ARM had, really. Wasn't the Swift guy was working on a RISC-V startup. What the hell?
Yeah.
Latner
was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, RISC-V, you know, it when the money machine got turned off, it lost some funding, but I think like Sci-Fi's hanging on, so that's good to see. But there's just it's seemingly more and more momentum behind ARM.
Did you hear that in the background?
Yeah.
That's my printer spooling up. Because you know what? All the printers are starting again in 6 months.
I think you're probably right. You're probably right. And Meta's banking on that, no doubt. So that way they can start building the metaverse again. And they...
Oh my God, Don Quixote. Mark, stop charging this windmill.
They have teased that next week they're going to release an update to Llama 3. And they're calling it a small version Llama 3. So it's ideally going to be much more compact. Some people are even saying, like, possibly running on a Raspberry Pi 5. That's, I think, just hearsay at this time. And then later on this year, they plan to launch a Llama 3 Big that's multimodal, that can do text and images and video potentially. But it's getting really good. And some are suspecting if they release a 7 billion version, there's going to be... They're probably going to be passing Mistral, or however you say it. And the community around all of these different LLMs seems to kind of be dividing up into camps, like three or four different camps, which is really interesting. And there's a conflict that's brewing between, like, it's becoming fiefdoms. And that's been a fascinating thing to watch. But here's been the question that I've seen floated around after this tease this morning. People write, they cannot figure out why Meta is doing this, why Meta is, quote, wasting money on this. They say it's unclear why a company like Meta is spending so much on building and releasing these models. It's quite odd. There's little to no business case for it. Google, I can understand, but they say, what is driving Meta to release these? Why is Meta releasing Llama and Llama 3 and clearly working very hard because they're doing this minimized version, which takes some engineering, and they're going to do a larger version that's multimodal just later this year. Llama itself and capability is getting quite good. We're seeing the community extend it quite a bit. The question, though, that's being raised is why? What's Meta's motivation, right? We have to remember, I mean, these are the Facebook people. These are like the watch everything you do. These are the we buy a VPN so we can spy on stuff that you don't want us to spy on people. So why release Llama 1, 2, 3? Why continue to iterate on this? Put all of these resources on it, hundreds of engineers, and then just put it out there.
You know, it's interesting. I almost feel like they are not the first mover in this AI stuff and maybe going open source. It's almost like this is a history lesson, right? Why did Netscape go open source? Because they were going to get crushed by IE. Maybe, maybe not, right? We'll see what happens. I'm always a little skeptical of the Zuck just because of, you know.
I'm skeptical too, actually.
Yeah.
I look at this from a cynical perspective. I'm really mixed on Meta these days. At first, what they were doing was so abhorrent. But then it turns out lots of companies are doing that. In fact, there's more companies than we realize that are doing it in, like, with our financial transactions. And this rabbit hole just goes really deep. And so then in comparison...
Capital One is now... I believe it's Capital One is selling your credit card transactions to advertisers. Yeah.
And I also think a lot of the hate that Meta and Zuck get now is from election politics. But when you look at the numbers that were spent on Facebook ads, Like, they really had very little impact. So I think some of that's been a little overblown, but I think some of it's also legitimate. So I remain pretty skeptical and cynical. So that's my bias towards this story. But when I look at this, I think you're right, Mike. I think if they were in OpenAI's position, I doubt we'd be seeing this. We might, but I doubt it. I've watched a couple of interviews with Zuck where he talks about where he sees AI going. And he's a hyperbole. He's like Sam Altman levels of bullish on AI. And he believes like it's going to cure all diseases eventually. Like, he goes far beyond anything that you could ever imagine for how he thinks AI is going to be powerful. And so I suspect he thinks this has a lot more runway and that there's a lot more it can and will be doing. And we need to get there faster, because the faster we get there, the faster Meta can incorporate it into their products that actually make them money. You know, you could incorporate it into Facebook. You could incorporate it into chat apps. You could incorporate it into the VR headsets, the metaverse applications. Even if it was just things like moderating Facebook better, or if it was things like better interactive chat bots in the metaverse when you go chat with an NPC. Like, there's probably 10,000 different ways a company like Meta could take something like Llama, say Llama 6 one day or whatever it is, that's gotten genuinely better, and utilize it. And I've suspected this for a little while now, but watching the way the community has built on top of Llama, like, go on Hugging Face and just kind of look around, or use some of the apps I've talked about before on the show to pull down these different versions of Llama. It's really incredible. And I bet Zuck's just sitting back and just soaking up the free dev work, soaking up all of that free community time.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, he doesn't have the lead product, but he doesn't, because that's not their primary product, he doesn't need it to be the lead, and he can sit here and play this longer game. I suspect that's what's going on. What do you think? Does that check out?
I think Zuck's always playing a longer game. Like, you know what? We're here in the 21st century playing 2D chess, and, you know, Zuck is up there with the Romulans playing 5D chess. And even Worf is like, I didn't know there was 5D chess.
Yeah, no. Yeah, well, they made it in the metaverse, so, you know.
And I'm pretty sure he plays it with no honor, so I would say he is not a Klingon warrior.
Yeah, I think I agree.
But you know who is a Klingon warrior?
Who's that?
Very few people in Discovery, which I'm on the last release season of, Chris.
I haven't started it yet because I'm waiting for Brent to come down from Canada.
Mm.
But I'm going to, I think probably in the next, by the time we do another episode, I think I'll have watched it.
All right, so can I take a 5-minute tangent?
Yeah.
I have some fifis.
Okay, I figured you would. I think I will too.
So I had to watch it through the lens that you gave me a couple months ago of, it's not really traditional Star Trek, it's about personal growth.
Yeah.
And my level of disappointment, well, first I had a high. My man Saru, by the way, spoilers, because, you know, I love Captain Saru. I'm down, I'm here for it. I like that he's got his weird,
I agree,
spiky
Saru's my
things.
Boo.
He's my man. He makes a lot of sense. He's a little less murdery than Lorca, although I still say Team Lorca all the way. I like Giorgio. I even kind of like Berman now, but the whole like weird love thing, I just wasn't there for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they cut his hooves from, because he has hooves, right? Because Saru. Right from underneath him. And also, the burn? Seriously? That's the dumbest plot contrivance I've ever seen. I was expecting it to be something like epic, like, and, you know, like the equivalent of Space OPEC just burned all the dilithium crystals.
Ooh, that'd have been good.
That'd have been, like, I thought the Emerald Tie, Emerald Chain, rather, was going to be, you know, like basically Space OPEC.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah.
And then it was like, actually, one, like, child had a very, albeit, for sure, super traumatic, distressing experience, and something feeling space magic.
Subspace. Yeah.
Right. Subspace magic, right.
It's the Lost problem there, where they build up the mystery so intense, but they always fumble the execution on the reveal.
Well, wouldn't it have just made more sense for the Emerald Chain to have just been Space OPEC plus terrorism?
But that's not about personal development.
You could not be a terrorist. I mean, you could change your mind.
Yeah, I suppose it could.
I could see an obvious step there.
Not to go there, but it's the in-shitification of content on these streaming platforms.
Yeah, it felt forced.
They did the thing that I'm always talking about these days. And so I don't want to be obnoxious, but just to make it clear, they had to grow horizontally. You know, I mean, you've heard me mention it before. Leo over at Twit went through this. You see podcasters that you saw me do it, where you just expand out horizontally.
Stowe was great.
Yeah, right. And you just go and you go until you literally can't handle anymore, because that's how you create ad inventory, or that's how you create membership benefits, right? Because there's a bigger number on the content available. And you just cannot keep up the quality when you scale that way horizontally, especially when you're working with something as topic specific, like in my case, Linux, or in the case of Star Trek. You know, that's a very specific niche where there are topic experts that care. And so you got to keep the quality up. And I think the only way for Paramount Plus and Star Trek to really survive would be to essentially cut 60-70% of the content and focus. And what you have left, you focus on quality.
Yep.
And, you know, you hire the best. And because you're not paying more salaries, you can pay the people that do the remaining stuff appropriately and hire good writing talent. They're just not, that's not what they do.
But I will give them credit, right? Once I looked at it through the lens you gave me, I was actually like, you know what? It's not the Star Trek. It's more like Star Wars in a lot of ways, right? Where it's like, you know, somehow Yoda can like just casually lift a plane out of a swamp, but kind of tripped and fell during his fight with Sidious. I was like, I'm done. You know, that's it. But like, okay, you take the stupidness of Star Wars because it's like their emotions get in the way and like you can't have that. Because it's bad. But although Star Wars has the same problem now, too. I mean, how many Star Wars IPs are coming out on Disney Plus?
They do. Yeah, they do. They do.
But, like, I was there for it. I don't know. Maybe season 5 will be better.
We'll see.
Sorry. That's my rant.
Well, while we're keeping our old man hats on, you know, when we started this show, coding boot camps were such a thing. And then you might remember we saw a meme of Learn to Code Bro. Like, there was this wave of, when somebody would get laid off, they would send them to camps to go learn to code. It became a even kind of like a politically triggering thing to say because it just was used so much. And it turns out kids these days don't seem to be listening. Now, I don't know, you know, if we could really take these last couple of years as any kind of serious indication, but the numbers seem to be showing that young people are going more into trade jobs.
Here's something very surprising and probably some good news. Yeah, good news. More and more of America's youngest workers are ditching college and going to trade school instead. The number of students enrolled in vocational community colleges rose 16% from last year, while enrollment at traditional four-year colleges basically stayed flat.
So what do you think about this idea? Just as a discussion piece, let's go for it with it for a moment. That we have less people interested in software development jobs and technical jobs, and maybe more people signing up for trade jobs. Good, bad, and what's the impact on the industry?
Yeah, I think that's good, right? That's the market working. There is a lot of money to be made in the trades right now, and
I know. I kind of feel like I should encourage my kids to just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I but then I also think what I worry about is a future where basically it's COBOL for everybody. Like, nobody really understands how any of this works. The very few people that do are dying off, and there's nobody left to train the next generation. And I know that sounds silly, but look what happened to the Apollo program.
Not really. That's an episode of South Park. They just did that, right? Where nobody actually knows. Yeah. All the professionals are standing outside of Home Depot begging for day work, and all the tradesmen are basically, literally, they have one who's like Jeff Bezos and another one who's like Elon. They're in a fight. They're two carpenters or something. Or no, they're just they're handymen. And they're launching different spaceships in competition with each other, yelling at each other from the windows of their bridges.
That's hilarious. I was just thinking more recently of, I mean, just the, I don't know, recently, but the real issue we have with the Apollo program, where there has been just entire sets of skills lost, and we're relearning and reinventing how to get a rocket ship to the moon. And that seems incredible, because it's what an incredible thing that we figured out, what a feat of engineering, and then to have lost it. Because we, you know, the program didn't continue, the work didn't continue, there weren't new people coming along. It just seems to me like not an exact analogy, but it raises the possibility in my mind.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things here, right? Like, a lot of these boot camps going out of business is a good thing. They basically existed because of drunk money, right? The money printer that we talk about almost every week now, where organizations were looking at headcount, rather not headshot, that would be pictures, above anything else to show that they're growing, they're hip, they're, you know, forget the revenue, forget the fundamentals. We're a growing tech company. Yay. Leasing you office space and telling you to manifest it. Here's my wife, Rebecca, right? It's a WeWork reference. Now things are balancing back out. One of the challenges, and I think we see this in our jobs channel, which we haven't plugged in a long time, but we do help folks get jobs and help people hire good folks. If they listen to the show, they're probably a better hire than most, I would say, is there's a glut of junior people that have had nothing but these boot camps that most of them were puppy mills, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's bad. A rebalancing is good. With that said, technology jobs are only going to grow. They're just going to change as they always do, right? So I don't know. I kind of feel optimistic about Mike Rowe's thing because, yeah, right now it's if you can go into the trades, that is a great idea. Technology is always going to grow effectively. It may be tough to be like I build simple websites for small businesses guy, because I do think that kind of thing is, I mean, Wix is trying to put you out of business as quickly as possible. And if Automattic gets their shit together, WordPress should too. Although WordPress is still a little too hard to use, I think, for your average diner owner. But yeah, I don't know. It's just...
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And I guess... if I were to think about somebody young listening to this show, it seems like you could get into a trade for 10 years, you know, through your 20s, as an example, be an electrician for 10 years. You get a great job, union work, great benefits. And then if you want to get into a technology career, nothing says you can't change. You know, you don't have to be a tradesperson for the rest of your life if you don't want. And I suppose vice versa as well, although it seems to me the path would be if you went into trades early, now you've developed a skill set that you can use in your personal life all the time, right? Especially if it's something like carpentry or electrician or something that, you know, it's actually a useful skill. That's something you'll use for the rest of your life. And you could always maintain a hobby as technology on the side, truly enjoy it, just go with the parts you enjoy. And you could pivot later in life. You know, maybe when you turn 35, you decide, okay, well, now I'm going to become a Rust developer. You know, there's no rule against that. I hope it's true. You know, it's not huge numbers that they're reporting. It's a good thing. It feels like a positive thing to see, though.
Ask not what your podcast can boast for you, but what you can boast for your podcast.
Odin's Ride came in with 10,000 sats using Fountain. Says, I'm just here to help. Thanks, guys. Well, thank you, Odin's Right. Appreciate that. You are a baller booster, so here you go. Just a little booster for you.
Hey, Rich Lobster!
Scott came in with 2,000 sats. No message. Just wanted to support the show. And Trey Fordham came in with 5,555 sats. He says, I just wanted to mention that I just got out of a 3-day-long data visualization class using Panda, NumPy, Matplotlib, lib, I guess might be what it is, and the like. I didn't need the class, but I did enjoy the experience. It also showed me the woes of dependency management in Python in a Windows environment. Python class-shell.nix for the win. Thank you,
yeah.
Trey.
Yeah.
Oh, that's got to be rough to watch. That's the exact kind of situation where Windows in a new environment in like a, you know, presentation or whatever is really, it can be just the worst. But I'll tell you what was pretty embarrassing. Not too long ago, I was at NixCon, you might recall. And they decided at NixCon to walk people through setting up things, get Nix going. And they set up some tables in the middle so people could just get down and get to work. Maybe you only talk to these people online. So, hey, you're finally together. Let's actually do some work. And that actually was a big hit. Until GitHub started rate limiting the conference. Because you had all these guys behind a NAT They're checking in and checking out of GitHub. They're doing updates and also checking in with GitHub. They're doing all kinds of stuff. And GitHub saw it as a DDoS and started rate limiting GitHub access to the entire venue. So it just totally upended everybody's work. So sometimes even when you got it working on the local machine, the cloud service will still get you.
Oh, I just had a problem like that. Asset pipeline on an old Rails project we talked about a little bit a few weeks ago. It was killing me. And it was so dumb. It was just because of the host, Heroku, had changed the default on their new, I think they call them build packs. I see, Chris, I'm getting so senile now. The proprietary, it's just like a, you know, it's just tool chained, right? But everybody has to brand it their own way because, you know, God forbid.
I'm doing that thing where I'll use like the old name for stuff. Like when I was a kid or a young man and we learned what something was, and now we have like an equivalent today, but I'll still call it the old thing. I'm doing that these days. And then my kids are like, Dad, it's, and I'm like, oh my God, it's happening.
Yeah.
Sync comes in with 5,000 sats. Can we get Michael to join the one true bird app? Over a year ago, I heard you folks discussing Nostr, and it made me curious, so I started some small test clients, and behold, 1 year later, I'm still creating things for it. I've been tuning in for over a decade on the show. So thank you for the many hours of tech talk. P.S. No surprise, but I love the Nostr workshop idea. I have been getting more into Nostr recently, especially as like the Section 230 stuff is going to come before the Supreme Court, and we see, I don't know, just a lot of shenanigans on social media, which has kind of turned it into essentially the new mainstream media. And Nostr feels like where it still gets a little weird, a little raw. Like you might know this, what I'm talking about, but because there's not a lot of people on Nostr, I haven't done anything embarrassing yet, but I can, like when I'm on Twitter, I think a lot before I post, like how are people going to react to this? Am I going to upset people? Am I going to get yelled at? You know, is somebody going to dig this up in 15 years and shame me? So I don't post usually. I just don't post.
Right.
But I don't feel those me tapping the brake sensations with Nostr because it's like it's a small, tiny community. So it feels like you can be wild again, even though eventually, inevitably, they'll dig something up on you. But it's a good feeling for just kind of social networking. But where Nostr has been really making me interested is basically using it as a data relay service, a decentralized JSON service. The Fountain FM folks have been test developing a embeddable web chat that is using Nostr and just passing JSON along on the Nostr network to enable the chat. And you can use your Nostr identity to join the chat. So the idea being that our podcasts use this chat and a bunch of other podcasts were using this chat, because you can also embed it in the mobile client, because again, you're just retrieving plain text. Then you could take one identity, your Nostr identity, and you'd be the same person in all of the different podcasting 2.0 apps or web chats that are embedded. Even if it's a different podcast on a different podcast network on a different website, your Nostr identity would move between all of them, because Nostr uses a public key, private key pair to identify you. And so you just take that with you. And so that I find to be a very interesting use of notes and other things through relays, which is what Nostr is. It's, you know, notes that are passed around over relays. And you can run your own relay, and Fountain's running their own relay. JB could run their own, or you just use the available community relays. It's got nothing to do with like a Twitter clone, because at the end of the day, Nostr is a protocol like HTTP. It's not HTML. It's the actual protocol. And so you can build all kinds of things around it. So I've been experimenting with it. You can find my social profile at chrislast.com if anybody's interested. You know, I mean, you're not going to have the reach and the network effect. When breaking news happens, it's still usually on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, so I just got back on Mastodon, right, to answer the question directly. I guess I'd consider Nostr. Okay, so what I've found so far after, let's say, almost a month back on Mastodon is the conversations on Mastodon are much better, but there's absolutely no marketing value for my business, really. Where on Twitter, there's also no marketing value. I'm spending a lot of time on LinkedIn. I don't know what to say. Twitter used to be good, but now everything gets a bot reply now. And if you looked at my DMs, you would think I was Hugh Hefner, or that I was weirdly a video game reviewer. Like, I'm getting endless DM spam from indie game companies, which, good on, you know, God bless, I hope your games go well, but I'm, you know, I guess I do gamer radio, but I it's not going to make a difference for you, right?
You got on somebody's list, I guess, right?
I somehow got on the list, right? And it's become Twitter used to be good. IRC used to be good. Now everything's terrible, I kind of feel.
I feel like IRC was kind of the peak.
Right. Like, I mean, I used to have Adium. I mean, pour one out for Adium.
Matrix is a good, you know, full, rich chat experience, much like Discord and Slack.
Yeah, Matrix isn't bad by any stretch. Discord's fine. I think Discord needs more granular notification controls.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'll probably check out Noster soon. It's like a level of effort versus available free time.
Oh, for sure.
And then I feel bad if I don't reply to people.
Yeah. Well, there's not a lot going on over there, so it's not super busy.
It's low effort.
Yeah, it is.
That's right up my alley.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm investing in it now because I do like the idea of me being in control of my identity with that public key, private key. The other nice thing is because it's just a protocol, there's multiple apps. Damus on iOS is good, and Primal is good on Android and iOS, and Primal.net on the web. But you can use lots of different clients. So sometimes I just use different clients because I feel like it, and I want to see what the developers are up to. I just take my key with me. So I like that about it. And then when we're looking at it as a back end to enable a web chat, the thing that's so cool about that is, well, if it's just plain text JSON, well, we could build all kinds of bots around that potentially. And it also means it's kind of associated with the live stream. So you could build back, if somebody wanted, in the podcast client, the ability to show the chat back, replay the chat in real time along with the show.
That would be interesting. See, that, like, that's the kind of thing I would be super down for.
That's where I think it gives us more future tooling. And the problem with anything like Discord or Matrix or anything like that is they're good for persistent community conversation. So that's where we would keep Matrix, is for the always on, always available community conversation. But when we do a live stream, we just kind of like bust in and we take over the community space for the hour or two that we're live, and then we're gone. And then like the regulars just kind of creep back in over time and start chatting again. But we're just like a whirlwind coming through there. So I think there's a better technology. I don't know if it's going to be Noster powered, but I like that that would make it decentralized. It would make it very hard to censor in somebody could pull you as an operator. You could probably have moderation controls, and that it would be cross-platform, cross-app, you know, things like that. So we'll see. I'll put links to Damus and Primal in the show notes.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Thank you, Sync, for the boost. Appreciate it. Lego Feet came in with 7,000 sats, and Chrissy says, don't you dare buy an Apple Vision Pro.
Ha!
I'm all for a productivity headset, but every time you review your latest purchase, I agree, and I end up buying one. I cannot afford nor justify another one. Have some self-control, man. Yeah, I'm not really likely, although I do leave room for possibility.
He's wobbling on you. Just, see this, Lego? See this?
Here's the problem is our buddy Alex from Self-Hosted got one. And he's been just pinging me with all kinds of stuff he's doing with it.
Don't let Alex corrupt you.
I know. And you know, the one that seems the most appealing, and I know this tells you the state of life, but the use case that's the most appealing is taking a laptop out into the car and turning my car into an office where I could work for a couple hours.
$3,500.
I know. Well, I mean, yeah, it would not be an easy decision, especially because there's so many other things that really that money could go towards. So I'm not very inclined to do it.
I think you shouldn't do it.
We'll see what they do at WWDC. I think it's very unlikely.
Oh, no.
I'd say it's like a 10% possibility. It's a 10%.
You know, how things have changed in all these years where I'm telling you to not buy the crazy thing.
Well, it's like 10% possible. But if they let me have 3 or 4 screens in there, which I don't think they're going to do.
No, they're not going
to
do that.
But if they did, then I could start to justify the cost of it to myself. But beyond that, I just can't see it.
Oh, Lord.
I know. I can't see it. I can't see it. We'll see. I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, even this morning, prepping the show, I was using the Quest headset. More and more, I'm like, God, I just wish it was a little bit higher resolution.
Mm. You know, of course you do.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I'd probably feel that way with the Vision Pro as well. Probably wouldn't get any better. Eric comes in with 2,345 sats. He says, I'm slightly behind on Coder, but C++ is my current favorite programming language. The standard library is quite beautiful and elegant in its design pattern. Do we need a successor?
Nope.
Well, yes and no. A lot of the discussion, in my opinion, is around the speed of the ISO committee standardizing C++ versions and their stance on breaking things sometimes if something leads to an ABI break. The C and C++ languages are one of the remaining languages that are managed by an ISO committee. If I want to propose a change, I need to join my county's ISO committee. Then I can submit a proposal for a change. Some major changes like multidimensional span took 10 plus years to standardize. Who has that kind of stamina these days?
I'm old, Gandalf. I've been trying to get this string parsing library passed for 27 years.
Carbon is cool, and it's probably the most promising one. There's also a Hilo, or Halo, H-Y-L-O, from Adobe. Yeah, that Adobe.
Yeah, why? Okay, stop right there. Why would anybody agree to use an Adobe language again after we all had to suffer through the ActionScript in Adobe Air, folks?
I know, I can't see
just,
it.
Like, Adobe, go collect your $30 a month for whatever it is, Adobe Cloud, and go away.
Adversary 17 came in with a baller boost, 16,384 sats. Hey, rich lobster! He says, hi, Drew. Thanks for all you do. Well, yes, indeed.
Drew's amazing.
He is. Drew's great. Thank you.
Drew's better than your Drew.
And he gets a split. So if he goes and looks in his Albi extension, he'll see that message.
Pay the man.
But he'll also hear this. Sean W. comes in, you know, because he's editing. You see what I'm saying? So I don't have to mention the Albi thing because he's going to hear this right here, right now. Yeah, anyways. Sean W. comes in with Spaceballs boost, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sats.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life.
And he writes, it took some work to get there, but I'm finally able to boost into my favorite JB podcast, Sean from Australia. Well, congratulations, sir.
Excellent choice, sir.
Getting it set up is the trickiest part. Especially depending on the route you take, your country of origin. But once you're set up, it should be pretty smooth. And I really do appreciate it, Sean. So thank you. Thank you very much for boosting in. It's great to hear from you. Thank you, everybody who boosted in. We had 9 boosters and we stacked 61,629 sats. Not bad. Not great. Not good. But all right. And we appreciate every single one of them. Thank you so much. You can go grab Fountain and Strike if you want to just boost real easy and quick. We have links in the show notes, or check out podcastapps.com. Maybe grab Podverse or Castomatic or something else. There's so many great apps now, and they're really coming along with a great set of features, including things like value for value music, where people can cut in music and support the artist around that. But also things like Cloud Chapters. You find out about the episode within 90 seconds of it getting posted. That's really cool. A bunch of great things in those new podcast apps. Podcastapps.com. Mr. Dominic, anywhere you want to send the good people before we get out of here?
You could follow me on LinkedIn. I insanely use my real name, so, you know, I'm there. I guess X and Mastodon. It's Dominuco there. And if you need things automated, or I don't know why I keep blowing my own advertising campaigns, but Alice can now read machine data out of basically Raspberry Pis and insane proprietary Autodesk using things for construction companies. So if there's some custom solution you want on that, I now license libraries out of Alice as a kind of part of custom work. So
heck yeah,
might be
dude.
Helpful.
Heck yeah. That is really cool, man. You know what?
Yeah, it makes sense. Because you know what? Nobody coming to me wants like a SaaS solution. They want it like the way they want it. So
that sounds like people. You can find me at chrislass.com, chrislas.com, if you want to go see the Noster experiment, or follow me on the Weapon X, chrislas, and the pod is Coder Radio Show over there. And if you want to join our Matrix chat room, our persistent community chat, that is at coder.show/matrix. We're also live typically on Mondays, but not next week. I'll be in Austin. And then we'll be doing another double the week following that. So keep an eye out on that calendar at jupiterbroadcasting.com/calendar if you do want to participate in the live streams. We like it when you do. We think that's pretty neat. And then we have links. You can find those for today's episode at coder.show/565. Contact pages over there, as well as our RSS feed links. And then don't forget about jupiterbroadcasting.com. Lots of great shows over there. Self-hosted, I mentioned earlier. Linux Unplugged. There's even a This Week in Bitcoin kicking around somewhere. You can find it all over there, at least soon. Thank you so much for tuning this week's episode of the Coda Radio program. We'll see you next week.